We have a lot of teachers in our parish, and one of our parishioners is a first grade teacher. She was telling me about the first day of school, about one of her little students named Ryan. And she said that came lunchtime, and Ryan had been in half-day kindergarten the year before, so he remembered that. When the lunch bell rang, he went out to the little area where the coats are, and he put his coat on, and he took his lunchbox, and he got his backpack, and he started to head out the door. And the teacher said to him, "Ryan, where are you going?" He said, "I'm going home." And she said, "Well, you know what, Ryan? It's a little bit different in the first grade. In the first grade, we get to come here in the morning, and we do lots of work, and then we all go to lunch together. And then we get to come back here and do some more work, and then we go home at 3 o'clock. Well, he just looked at her, and when he realized that she wasn't kidding, he put his hands on his hips, and he said, "Who in the world signed me up for this program?" I think he captured that feeling pretty well. And all of us have had that feeling, like, who in the world signed me up for this? Might be that we're struggling financially. We might be struggling with an illness or grieving a loved one dying in our life or having relationship problems. And you just think, who signed me up for this? I did not choose this. This is not what I wanted. I didn't think this is what my life was going to be. And in the gospel today, Jesus has one of those moments. He's really at a very successful point in his life. He's preaching, he's healing people, a lot of people are listening to his message, and he goes back to his hometown. And they're not too interested. They're like, we know who you are. We grew up with you. Like, you're nobody. You're like, we know your brothers and sisters, we know your father, we know your mother, like, we're not going to listen to you. And he says, you know, in your hometown is the only place where you don't receive that honor or respect. And he's astonished at their lack of faith, astonished. Because faith is part of the miracles that happen. It's Jesus can't perform a miracle, or God can't work a miracle with us without our faith, without us believing in God's ability to do that. Jesus also, in other passages, talks about perseverance. Don't give up. Trust me. Listen to me. Stay with me. And in this second reading today in Hebrews, we're told to run the race with perseverance. To run the race with perseverance. So these two things kind of go hand in hand. Faith and perseverance. In 1928, there were two teams that played in the Rose Bowl, Southern California and Georgia Tech, and there was an event in that game that made sports history. At one point, the ball was fumbled on the field, and a man by the name of Roy Ragles picked up the ball and started running as fast as he could. He was a great player. He dodged all of the tacklers as they came at him, and he just kept running down the field. He ran 80 yards. He was almost to the goal when one of his own teammates tackled him. Now, the reason they tackled him is because he was running the wrong way to the opposite goal. He actually earned the nickname Wrong Way Roy. Some of you, and I remember my parents calling us Wrong Way Roy. You might remember that phrase. There goes Wrong Way Roy again. There goes Wrong Way Mary. There goes Wrong Way Myra. Which brings me to the first point about perseverance. You have to be going in the right direction. You have to have some discernment about what your life is about what's important for you. If you run in circles, you're not going to get anywhere. If you run backwards, you're not going to get anywhere. And that's where Jesus comes in. Jesus is our guide. He lays out for us a path in his teachings and the way he models his life, a way for us to follow his example. And so we need to ask ourselves at times, are we going in the right direction? And we know when we're not going in the right direction, when it feels uncomfortable to us, when there's something that's troubling us, something that's in our heart that's saying, something's not quite right here. There's a very popular show on Home and Garden TV. I like to throw in a Home and Garden television show because you always get sports shows, and I think we should have equal time for Home and Garden, you know. It's a very popular show. It's called Fixer Upper, and it features a couple, Chip and Joanna Gaines, who do a lot of rehabbing of homes. And now they've become so popular that they have a huge business there with 2,000 people a day that come to their site. But early in their career, when they were first married, they opened a little market called Magnolia Market, a little home goods store. And this was Joanna's dream to have this. And then they had children. By the time they had their second child, doing the rehabbing, running the store, taking care of the children, it was just too much. Things were starting to fall apart. And so they said that they felt God told them to close the market. And she said it was very hard for her because this was a dream of hers to have this market. But she said that God had taught me to study the word and believe it, even when it hadn't been fulfilled yet. I had to cultivate a place of faith that I never had before. I had to trust God, that God would lead me. God was working in my heart to establish a deeper level of trust that I now look back on and am thankful for. Sometimes we're just not ready for the dream that we have. The soil hasn't been tilled. We haven't gone through the preparation that we need to sustain us in that dream that we have. And sometimes that shuts down for us. But it's all part of a bigger plan that we can't always see. We don't always know what that is, and that's where the trust comes in. And knowing that even though sometimes things don't work out as we think they should work out, that there's a plan that's bigger than us. In this passage from Hebrews, it says, "Let us throw off everything that hinders us and run with perseverance the race." Throw off the things that hinder us. Sometimes those things are our own expectations or judgments about other people. In Australia, they hold an ultra marathon every year. It's 573 miles that the runners run. So this is like a major event, and as you can imagine, the best runners come to do this marathon. It takes them days to run it. In 1983, they hosted this marathon. There was a registration table there, and a man came up to the table by the name of Cliff Young. Now, Cliff was a 61-year-old sheep herder, and he came dressed as he always did, in his overalls, his boots, even his galoshes over his boots, and he said, "I'd like a runner's number." Well, they just snickered and laughed at him, but he was serious, so they gave him a number. He got in line with all the other runners, who, of course, were all dressed in professional running gear. The race started, and people laughed even more because the runners took off, and he was just kind of shuffling along, just like he was out on the farm. People shouted out, "Get that fool out of the race." But he persevered. He kept going, and 5 days, 14 hours, and 14 minutes later, at 1:25 a.m. in the morning, he crossed the finish line. He not only crossed the finish line, but he actually won the race. He won the race not by a few minutes or a couple of hours, but by 9 hours and 56 minutes. People were stunned. How could this possibly happen? Well, the way it happened was that nobody ever told Cliff Young that when you run an ultra marathon, you run for 18 hours and then you sleep for 3 to 4 hours. So he had no expectation of being able to sleep. And he did not sleep the entire race. And so he came in 9 hours ahead of everybody else. He just persevered and endured the race. Sometimes it's our expectations about things that get in the way of our endurance. You might think, well, I don't deserve to be sick like this, so why should this happen to me? Or I don't deserve to have a problem at work. I'm a good worker, so this shouldn't be a problem for me. Or why do I have to grieve the loss of someone? When both of my parents died in 2005, they both died just a few months apart. And I was really struggling with that. And so for the summer, I started going to a therapist every week. And after about 4 weeks of that, I said to this very wonderful therapist, I'm not going to be coming anymore. I really don't like doing this. It's like, it's really dragging me down. It's really depressing. I don't want to be grieving anymore, so this is my last visit. I'm not going to be here next week. And he just smiled at me, and he said, okay. And the next week, I was right back there in the chair because I was still grieving. Even though I didn't want to, I was still grieving. And it was just something I had to go through. There was no saying, somebody else can do this. I was the only one that can do it, and I had to do it myself. Sometimes we have to let go of our expectations that there's not going to be difficulties, that we don't have to go through it, that somebody else can handle this. When we let go of those expectations, then we can find the endurance that we need to go through it. When Dr. Tony Voltaire from Haiti was here, he is the doctor who leads our hospital in Haiti. He was telling a small group of us about his schedule at the hospital. He said he gets up at 5 a.m., and he works through the day and through the evening, and he sometimes goes to bed as late as midnight or 1 in the morning. And so someone asked him, well, Dr. Tony, don't you get tired? He said, if I get tired, people may die. So I just don't allow myself to get tired. That was the first time I ever realized that getting tired was a choice. I thought it was just something that happened to me. I'm tired, you know? But I realized that we do have the ability to make choices about getting tired. And we've all experienced that. If you're a parent and you've had to be up in the middle of the night, you just make a choice to get up. You're just not tired. Or if you're taking care of perhaps an elderly parent that needs your attention, you just do it. You just go through it and you do it. You find that energy to do what you need to do. Right now, there are people working round the clock in Thailand to rescue the boys on that soccer team. Round the clock, and no one is saying, I'm tired, because they're not thinking about being tired. They're thinking about what the boys need them to do, as we are too. So we have a tremendous strength of endurance within us. When we think about running this race of life, it's important that we know that that endurance is there, and also that we know what we're passionate about, because it's our passion that gives us the strength to do that. All of us have callings here. Some of us are doctors or therapists or teachers or car mechanics or musicians. We have passions that we are already following. There was a study done of children who excelled at playing music and became great musicians in their lives. And the people doing the study were looking at what were the predictors of a child who would become a great musician. What made these children able to do this? And they discovered several things that were not predictors. These were not. The IQ didn't matter. Hearing was not a predictor. Math skill was not a predictor. Their income was not a predictor. Even a sense of rhythm was not a great predictor of who would become a wonderful musician. The best indicator of a child who would excel in music is how they answered this question. How long do you think you will play? The children who planned to play their instrument for a short time did not become accomplished musicians. The children who planned to play for a few years had modest success. But the children who said, I want to play this instrument for the rest of my life, they soared at what they did. They became great musicians. The same is true for us spiritually. When we say to God, I want to follow Jesus for the rest of my life. I want to live my life as a Christian. I want my life to be a gift of love for others. Then we excel at it. When we say, well, I think I'll try out Spiritus Christi for a couple of weeks and see how it goes, then that's probably what we'll do, a couple of weeks. Or if we say, you know what, I'm gonna pray through the month of July and see what happens. And that's probably what we'll do. We'll pray through the month of July and that'll be it. When we don't really invest ourselves, we don't endure the entire race. We give up too easily. And so knowing who we are and what we're passionate about is very important. We can accomplish amazing things when we commit our life to it. There's a place in India where a villager cut a 300-foot-long passage through a mountain. It's 33 feet wide and 26 feet high. He cut that passage through the mountain using a hammer and a chisel. He did it by himself. It took him 14 years to cut that passage. He did it so that the villagers could reach the local hospital on the other side of the mountain. Now, why in the world would he do that himself? Because when his wife died, he couldn't get her to the hospital in time. And he didn't want anybody else to suffer as he did. So he was passionate about making that tunnel. When we are passionate, we can do things that no one would ever imagine. If we hang in there, if we allow God to use us, if we refuse to quit, great things can happen. If we give up, God can't use us. We have to learn how to persevere. In this passage from Hebrews, it tells us to persevere by keeping our eyes focused on Jesus and to consider what he endured so that we will not grow weary and lose heart. So let me close by just helping us to reflect for a moment on how Jesus persevered. When Jesus began his ministry, he was tempted by the devil for 40 days in the wilderness, but he persevered. When his own family and the people in his town didn't understand what he was doing and thought he was crazy, he persevered. When his followers began to fall away and no longer followed him, he persevered. When religious leaders told lies about him, he persevered. When Judas betrayed him for 30 pieces of silver, Jesus persevered. When he went to the Garden of Gethsemane and his sweat dropped like great drops of blood as he prayed, facing the cross the next day, he persevered. When the crowds cried out, "Crucify him," he persevered. When his best friend denied him, he persevered. When they thrust a crown of thorns upon him and he suffered excruciating pain, he persevered. When they nailed him to the cross and mocked him, he persevered. Jesus persevered all the way through his death and cried out, "It is finished." And then he rose. He rose above all the pain, above all the rejection, above the heartache, above the loneliness. He rose. He persevered, and he won the race. So the message today, don't give up. Remember always that Jesus is with you. And with Jesus accompanying us, we can make it through the difficult times in our life, and there will be difficult times, and there are difficult times. We can make it through the struggles. We can make it through the long nights. We can make it through the times of being tired. We can persevere, and we can win the race. Amen, everyone.